Welcome to All the Bits, a fake radio show about board games, the community, and all the lovely, lovely bits. All the Bits is a proud member of the Dice Tower Network and is sponsored by Board Game Bliss, a store where you can find an amazing selection of games from around the world, bringing joy to you and your loved ones. Without further ado, here are your hosts, Sean and Michelle.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 75.
In this episode's Bits, we will talk about Fayum, or Fayum, depending on what you want to say, Magical Kitten Save the Day, Cloud Age, and Under Falling Skies. We'll discuss the BGG Thread Spotlight, what makes tabletop games special, and get up to our usual antics of asking pointless questions, guessing games, and drooling over bits.
And we're going to follow through on something for once.
But first, before we follow through, can I tell you something? Speaking of drooling?
Sure. I don't know if I want to
know.
Not
that thing. I am currently drinking a pumpkin pie spiced ale.
Ooh.
It's very basic, as the kids say, you know, and that's what I'm currently drinking. It's actually pretty good. It's like a dessert beer.
That sounds gross. I don't know. Pumpkin.
It's also been in the back of my fridge for, like, I think since, like, last Thanksgiving, pre-pandemic Thanksgiving. So I don't know if I'm going to get sick or not. But
neat.
As we have all talked about, Michelle, I need to be drinking when I'm recording with you.
Yes. I make people drink, apparently. Well, I am drinking water. So there you go.
And speaking of drinking to something special.
Yay. Good segue, Sean.
That champagne.
We last episode? Last episode? The episode before last?
One of the last few episodes.
Yes, we said we had an announcement.
Yes.
We teased. And we'll fill you in today.
Do we have to?
No, let's just move
on. Oh, sweet. All right. Let's start our ask me. No, okay. Yes, we have an announcement about some merch.
Yeah. We've had some folks reach out to us over the years. Have we been at this for years? I think we have.
Years, yeah.
Yeah, over the years, wanting some merch, and yeah. Part of why we didn't do it was laziness, but also wanting something of quality. I really didn't want to just like go to some
Teespring.
Generic, yeah, like generic shirt with generic logo that doesn't look very good.
Yes,
I wanted something nice.
Yeah, not to be a jerk or anything, but a lot of like, not just board game. I feel like, you know, just like obscure, and we are an obscure hobby. Like different, you know, things like from like podcasts and stuff. Like, and I do have a number of non-board game related podcasters. And they all have kind of not great quality to them. That's the one thing. And kind of itchy you when you wear them. And not always the nicest. So, yeah.
Yeah.
So I have, like, I don't know. I just find there's, like, can often be, and that's not everyone, but there can often be a thing in, like, yeah, you know?
And I wanted something that was like not just our logo. I don't know. I know some, maybe that's what some people want, but I wanted to do something special. I do have a friend actually who does silkscreen shirts and does art with them. And I did talk to her and she wasn't available. And then we came across this really cool opportunity with Meeples Crossing.
Meeples Crossing, and this is a local to us in Alberta. T-shirt kind of a new t-shirt making company, and they make really, we have the link, we'll provide the link in the show notes as well, but they make awesome t-shirts.
Yes.
And stickers, and I think, yeah, stickers are the other thing, right? I have a couple on my laptop. But they make really nice, yeah, the t-shirts are so awesome. They did for FallCon, which is our local, one of our main local our main local convention, gaming convention. I'm looking for the word. And they made the Falcon, the last Falcon one, which unfortunately was canceled for the pandemic, but it's an awesome shirt with the little meeple hanging down because Falcon was canceled.
Oh, yeah.
I love yeah. that shirt. I have one of those. I bought one of those. And just the the quality on them. I absolutely adore them. I really like the artwork. There's lots of very...
Yeah, there's some really nice designs. It's not cheesy.
No.
Yeah, it's nice art, good art, good quality shirts. And they don't look like they were just printed at like a, you know, local place or whatever. Like they're just really nice. I have what does my shirt say? I'd rather play board games is my shirt the design I chose of theirs, and it's my favorite shirt. Like it's just so it's really comfy. And the fabric is really nice. So
yeah.
We reached out to them and they reached out to us as well. And they've been working on a design for all the bits. So something that's a little bit more special than just our logo, but still represents us.
Yeah.
So, so we've been going back and forth on that a little bit, and we'll have something to share, I hope, soon.
Very soon. Yeah.
Yeah. So
super duper excited about it.
We are. It's time.
It's time. It's time. Yeah. Finally. It's 75 episodes and it's time.
Woo!
We're a t-shirt. Other than that was it like a Vistaprint t-shirt with our logo?
Yeah, we did some for ourselves to represent at a con. But yeah, I mean, I think it was worth the wait. I mean, I'm really excited that we have a partner that can create a really nice design and some really nice quality clothing, so that if you do choose to purchase something, you will be very happy with it, and I will feel comfortable and confident that you are making a good choice, and that's good. Totally. So there you go. Stay tuned. In the meantime, of course, you can check out their website to see some of their other really great designs.
Meeplescrossing.com, which like I said, will be in this. It's pretty simple. It will be in the show notes as well, but meeplescrossing.com. Oh, yes. And they have a new coffee bean and board game.
I ordered that one.
Did you? Yeah.
Yeah, I'm super excited. I love it.
What the sheep one.
Yeah.
Explain that to my daughter.
Yeah, they have some good ones. I like the early bird gets the worm for Wingspan and Nature Stupid play board games instead.
Yeah, I have that one too. My wife hates that one.
I bet she does. Yeah.
Yeah. Super exciting news here from All the Bits.
Yeah. Yeah. So we'll keep you posted as we go through this process.
Yeah.
Speaking of a process, let's move on to our next bit.
This is our Ask Me Anything bit, wherein we ask each other useless questions about this beautiful hobby.
We do. And I think maybe I've asked you this question before, but I really hope I haven't.
All right.
So, Sean, are there any games in your collection that you don't see yourself playing again, but you also cannot bear to part with?
I'm looking and turning my back. That I don't... I'm sure there is, even though I always say that I get rid of games a lot, but I feel like I'm sure there is. Although I don't know.
I know you love Anomia. That's a game you still play?
Oh, yeah, I'm sure. Well, yeah? not now, because...
Well, right.
Ew, that is like the least COVID-friendly game, because you have to slap it. I'm sure there is. I just can't think of anything offhand right now. I'm sure there is. I cannot think of anything offhand.
Can't think of anything.
I think
for myself, it might be Pandemic.
Got rid of that long time ago.
Yeah, that's a game that got me into the hobby, and I don't see myself playing it again. I don't think, but I also don't want to get rid of it. That's the only one I can think of. Maybe I was gonna say Skippo because I used to play that with my grandpa, and he's since passed. Mm-hmm. So maybe Skippo.
Okay, looking at my thing now, maybe I have these two little Cosmos games that we actually got when we were in Germany. And one is it like Cakeless or something like that? The Rock game, and then there's another one which I can't remember. And I feel like I'll never actually play those because I don't even know what the rules are for them. I'm sure I could look them up. I think we played them. But, you know, they were like a souvenir. We went to Europe for like 5 weeks. Like 4 years ago, 5 years ago. And yeah, we picked up, I went to a video game, board game store in, I think, Munich it was, and got those two little games because all we had were, we kind of backpacked it, so we didn't actually have any, I couldn't buy anything big. So I think probably those, yeah.
Nice.
Yeah.
You came up with one.
Yeah, there we go. I had to turn around and while you were talking, look at all my games. I didn't mean to be insensitive about your grandfather, by the way. If it's if it came across as anything,
nope,
I was turning. I'm starting to look at my shelf.
It did not. Not at all.
All right. Well, I'm going to ask you anything about something that we haven't done in a while, and it's not the board game random generator thingamabob. We are going to go to this time Inga's anagram generator.
Oh no! I'm even worse at this.
A cup, depending how long it takes you to guess them, a couple of anagrams.
Okay.
Now, I'm going to give you a big hint, though. Whether I do one, two, or three, depending how long it takes you, these will all be Uwe Rosenberg games.
Oh, okay. All and right? I can, am I allowed to type the letters?
Yeah, just don't go to an anagram generator and reverse do it. But
oh,
other
come
than that,
on.
Don't, you can type or write down or whatever you want. It doesn't matter. And we'll see if people at home can get them. This is a hilarious one because of something that I have texted you about earlier. But this one, the anagram is pork watch.
Pork watch. Okay. I wanted to say Akrotiri, even though that's not his game. What the? This is harder than it super seems hard. Like it should be.
Anagrams are super hard. I can't even pronounce them. They're so hard.
What's the K? I'm trying to think of all his games now. Okay, oh, Patchwork.
Yes, that's it.
Watch.
All right, let's. This one's. I was gonna try and do New Short for you, but that does not work at all.
Yeah.
For anything. All right, let's do. Here, we're gonna do this one. All right, you ready?
Mm-hmm.
This actually, the problem with this is not taking a long time to do it, is me. All right. This one is. I find one. That's not appropriate. All right.
I love how much giggling you're doing on your end. Like, no one knows what's going on.
like, you put in the word, and then I'll tell you after why. Okay. You ready? This one is Dal Os Rags.
Dal, like D-A-L?
D-A-L.
Yeah, Os, O-S.
S, Rags, R-A-G-S.
I want to say Sagrada, but that's obviously not his. Agricola, nope. Trying to think of all his games, and my mind's like drawing so many blanks. I see Grass, Caverna. I'm trying to think. Oh, this is gonna bug me when I get it, or you tell it to me.
You want some additional clues?
Sure.
It came out in 2013.
There's Aura. No, it's not Aura Labora. Oh, why can't I get this? Oh, Glass Road.
Yes, that's it. Okay. So there are like 100 words that have ASS as the first.
yeah, I figured that was, yeah.
There are just a lot.
I know you have a particular snicker. For bad words, it's like, yeah. You know, when they say, oh, you know, you'll get to know your baby's cries. It's like I got to know your snickers, so I know when there's like you see a bad word. Yeah.
All right, I'll just stop it too. I could keep going with anime.
Okay, you're like, that was painful. You know, it's weird. I've told you before, I play so many word games. You'd think that I would be better at that, but it's
hard. Anagrams are tricky, especially if you don't like you can't write them down and can't like mess with them for a long time. I'm sure you would be able to do that if we didn't. I mean, you could do that, and if it would take forever, I would just cut it out and then
make it sound like I'm super fast.
Yeah.
Yeah. Seriously, come on then. Speaking of getting answers super fast.
I lost it there.
I liked your a doody doo.
I just completely lost it.
Well, I appreciated your a doody doo.
What were we massacring? What was I massacring the theme for?
This is our Guess the Game bit, wherein we give each other vague, then specific, then super obvious clues from the Board Game Geek to guess a game. And, of course, we ask that you guess along. Mm-hmm. And if Sean cuts out the quiet, we'll always win.
Yes. I really should start doing
but
that.
But you're too lazy, like let's be honest.
We're so stupid. And people are like in their car screaming, that's clearly the answer.
It's so obvious. Yeah.
I'll go first and ask you.
Okay.
And keep clues from the Board Game Geek. All right. This game came out in 2018.
Okay. So I feel like I should know it.
Holy. It is ranked 32 overall.
Oh boy.
It's a big one with 20,000 ratings and 3,200 comments. It plays 1 to 4 players in 40 to, I didn't even know it played one player. 40 to, if I guess every game that year would play one player. 40 to 80 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
With a weight of 2.81.
Sagrada.
No.
No, I think Sagrada's earlier in 2018.
The designer is James A. Wilson.
Okay. James A. Wilson. Give me more.
There's so many mechanics. I'll give you categories. The categories are animals, card games, city building, and fantasy.
What? That is such a bizarre mix. City building, animals, fantasy, and card game.
Okay. Linger on the animals.
Oh, is it ethnos?
No.
That was a really good guess.
It's a great guess.
Sorry, linger on the what now?
On the animals.
Fantasy animal? What are fantasy animals? Unicorns?
Anthropomorphic and standing animals. What my guess about fantasy animals is.
2018. It's super popular. 1 to 4 super players. Popular,
yeah.
It's not like Rhino Hero or something, is it?
Yeah, when I think of Rhino Hero, I think of a 2.81.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Well, that's, I'm just thinking light at this point. But yeah, I guess Rhino here probably doesn't take 40 minutes. Hey. Okay. Give me more clues. I've got nothing.
So many mechanisms. Okay. I'll give you some of the mechanisms.
Okay.
I'm not actually sure if you have this game / have played it, but you're definitely familiar with it.
Is it Everdale?
It's this.
Okay, well, that was my pick.
Oh, was it really?
And how I didn't get that, like, super quickly, I do not know.
Everdale.
Oh, my goodness.
Nailed it.
Wow. That's, wow. Okay. Now I have to come up with a new one.
I mean, we could just say that I got it in record time and just move on.
That's true. We could, couldn't we?
That works for me.
Okay. Blah, here we go. Ready?
All right.
Okay, I don't even know if you know this game. I just got taken to Kickstarter. It's not a Kickstarter. It might have been at some point. I don't know anything about this game, so I don't know. Hang on. Let me find it on the BGG. Okay, this came out in 2016. Fact.
Fact. Okay.
Waiting for it to load. Also a fact. Okay. 2016, 8.0 rating with 11,000 ratings. Plays 1 to 4 in 60 minutes with a weight of 2.77.
Sure. Oh, wait. No, wait. It's not Everdale. Okay.
No. I can't believe it took me so long to get that. Oh, my gosh. Okay. Family. Oh, as a matter of fact, it was a Kickstarter.
Of course it was.
Did you know that there's a family on BGG called Components Official Music Soundtrack?
Okay, so it's got a music soundtrack?
Apparently it has a soundtrack, I think, is what that's saying. Okay, the categories are card game, fantasy, fighting, and science fiction.
Dead of Winter?
No.
Okay. Keep going.
Okay, I've got some mechanisms for you. Here we go. Wait, I clicked on mechanisms, now I have to scroll. Okay, card drafting. Cooperative. Deck, bag, and pool building. Delayed purchase. Hand management. Solo game. Variable phase order. Variable player powers. And variable setup. I don't even know if you've played this.
It's a cooperative game in 2016. Relatively popular. And it might have a soundtrack.
Oh, it definitely does. BGG does not lie.
It's got a soundtrack. I'm trying, now I'm like stuck on like games that like might have a soundtrack. Science fiction. Hey,
I don't know if you'll know this designer because this game is outside of my realm, but it's designed by Kevin Riley.
Nope. I got nothing.
Okay, I will give you the design or the publisher, because we're getting to that point. We've got indie boards and cards and action phase games. Those are the two big ones.
Aeon 10.
There you go. You did it.
That's gonna sound.
Have you played this?
I played Legacy. Yes, Aeon 10 Legacy.
Okay, so I did click on Components Official Music Soundtrack on BGG.
Yeah.
There are 30 games, by the way, that belong to this. Apparently, Abyss has one, which...
Good to see ya. Okay.
Seventh Continent, Chronicles of Crime, Escape. I'm not saying all of them. I'm just picking some. Last Night on Earth, I do remember that.
Yes,
I own that game.
I remember that one, yeah.
Mysterium, didn't know that. Nope. I'm wondering if this is through the apps, maybe?
Maybe.
Yeah. Tang Garden. You played Tang Garden. Do you remember a soundtrack?
I don't.
No.
I know specifically it was never unsealed in my copy of Last Night on Earth, but there was definitely a CD in there.
CDs are so funny to me. I'm like, what am I supposed to do with this?
Yeah.
Well, there you go. We learned something new, and that's all that matters.
That's it, man. That's all that matters.
Do you know what else matters? Pew pew.
I can't tell what song that is you're trying to sing when you're.
I don't know.
Not. I just assumed it was.
It probably was, but I've since lost it.
Well then, this is our rapid laser-like reviews wherein we explain games poorly and then tell you what we think of them after a play or more using our super official scale of...
One that would be a hard no, which I don't think we've ever given out. Or maybe we just recently did.
Well, last episode on a video game, I gave a hard no.
Oh, that's right.
Cannibal is a game.
Ah, yes, yes. Two is a meh. Three, I mean, it's fine. Four, 'tis a gooder. And five, it's got the spark.
Spark. All right. Who's pew-pewing it first?
I do not care.
I will pew-pew it. Okay. Because mine, as usual, are going to be pretty quickly. I'll start with this set. I'll leave the
magical
first.
Kitten save the day. What a Sean game.
Number two. We're going to keep that for. We're going to.
Oh, are we? We're going to save the best for last.
Mm-hmm. We're going to do my first pew-pew, which is going to be Under Falling Skies, which is a 2020 release for one player. It's a solo game, and it's currently got 8.0 on BGG with 1,400 ratings, plays in 20 to 40 minutes with a weight of 2.49. It is designed by Tomas. I have no idea how to pronounce that R, but Euler. We're going to leave it as that, with art by Quanchi Mora and Petra Bocic, and published by Czech Games Edition. So this is a game that took me a while to get to. This game had a lot of buzz when it first came out, and I think it still does. It is a, as I mentioned, solo-only game that is a re-implementation of one of those, I think where it comes from is, BGG has those, at the end of each year, they have some sort of contest for print and play games. And I think this is one of those that it started as a 9-card print and play, one of those games you just print off one sheet and you have a game of it. And Czech Games Edition turned it into this really great package, spoiler alert for my thoughts after, but it is a solo kind of dice chucking game. I'm going, because it really is campaign driven, I don't want to spoil very much, so I'm just going to kind of talk about the basics here. I'm not going to get into, as you go on for various campaigns in the game, new things happen, you start new cards are introduced, new dice, new other things. So I don't want to spoil any of that other than to let you know that it happens. But I'm just going to kind of do the base, which is AKA the kind of tutorial mission in this game. But what you are basically doing in this game is you are chucking dice and then you are placing dice on your board. And what you are ultimately trying to do is shoot down all the alien ships, which are coming to attack different cities on Earth. The first one you start with is Roswell. Shocking. The ships are coming down from the motherships, and you are trying to basically shoot them down. And basically,
pew, pew!
Exactly, this is perfect. And in order to do any kind of anything in this game, you need energy. So you can place your dice on the board to collect that energy. And in order to win, you have to avoid getting basically swarmed by all the baddies, all the bad guys, long enough to move your research level up to whatever number you're supposed to be at for the given game, to the top of the track, which you're doing. And in order to do a lot of these things, you need energy to be able to kind of make things work. There are a lot of things, like if you put your die on a certain spot, it might not do anything, it might not give you energy or research, but it might make the ships move down one less spot or something like that. There are all sorts of little rules that, the ships, when the ship phase comes. So any of these type of solo or cooperative type games, there's going to be, you're going to have your turn, you're going to have your phase, and then the ship, the baddies or whatever you're fighting against is going to have their phase. And during that phase, the mothership moves down and the ships spawn, and then they move down the track as well, closer towards you. And then there are, like I said, various rules where if a ship kind of goes into the same space as another one, it has to jump over, so on and so forth. But basically, that is what you're doing. You are placing your dice. You are trying to shoot down the ships. You are trying to get energy, and you are trying to get up the research track. There are some cool rules that I like. There's this excavator kind of in the on your player board, which is a little meeple, and basically what that means is you can only place your dice behind the excavator. So in order to kind of get the excavator further and further down the track, you always have to be kind of, I'm not going to say wasting, but kind of using up one of your dice to make it go further down the track, which is a cool thing because this game is you feel like, oh, there's just never enough. The ships are just coming. And you feel like, oh my gosh, I need to use all my dice in order to do this. But stuff gets better the more your excavator goes down the track in your little hub. That's kind of it. As you go through, kind of the tutorial mission is Roswell, and then it adds a couple of things. As you go on, there are various missions, and they introduce new cities, and new you get new powers, the bad guys get new things, like different things happen as it goes. But in terms of kind of the overall gameplay, it's no, you're rolling dice, you're placing dice, something's going to happen, bad guys are going to attack, so on and so forth, until either you get your research up or they swarm you and you lose. Like any solo game, especially one that relies on dice a little bit, it can be a little bit frustrating. It can be a challenge. It's not, at least I have not found it, not all the way through the campaign, but I don't find it like one of those games where it's like super, oh my gosh, overly hard. I definitely don't find it. The package, the components, it's really nice. I love it. It's got like wooden, like little wooden dice in it, which I always like. It's got, you know, the little miniature ships kind of remind me of the little ships from, is it Black Angel? I think it's Black Angel, right? They have little plastic ships.
Mm-hmm.
The little ships kind of remind me of that. I like the art. I love, like, there's no way looking at this game, which is a really cheap, it's not an expensive game. It was like a $20, $25 game. That's all it costs. You would never know, though, that this came from a 9-card print and play game. I love everything they did with it. This game, I think this game has the spark for me. I think this is, I have thoroughly enjoyed it. I don't know what there is in terms of playing solo game. I think when I talked about, what is that, like D6, the Dice Chucker space game, D6 space or something. I think I talked about it on the show.
I
think for these kind of like space themed games where you just roll a bunch of dice and are trying to not get squashed by aliens. But this one has the whole narrative piece, which is really cool, which is really nice. You know, it's not a legacy game. It's a campaign game. So you're not kind of destroying anything or whatnot. But I've had tons of fun. I love that it's only 20 or 30 minutes, which is kind of a must for me playing any solo game. Is, you know, you could set this one up on the table and just kind of leave it there. And if you have to come back to it, you can come back to it. Which, for me with a little one is often what I have to do. I remember the first couple of times I played this, I would have my little daughter in one arm, and she would be kind of sleepy. And I'd roll it, and then I'd have to go walk around with her, and I'd take my turn, and then I'd go walk around with her, then come back and take another turn. It works great for that, which is super important. So I think under Falling Skies has the spark. It is a 5 for me.
I've played this one as well.
Yeah, I really enjoy it.
Yeah, it's good.
There's also, it pairs really well with Michelle. If there's a local brewery here called Cabin Brewery, and they have something called the Fallen Skies beer, which is great dark sour if you're into that sort of thing. So it pairs really nicely with this. Just saying.
Nice. It also pairs well with the Vikings TV show because I played it while watching TV with my husband because I'm not very good at just sitting still and watching a TV screen. So I usually try to do something. And this, like you said, like you were just getting up with your daughter. I was playing this while watching TV because it's pretty chill. There were a few things too I thought that was worth mentioning in that. To me, it felt, the thing I liked about it was that it wasn't like, yes, it's dice chucking, but I felt like it was a little bit more puzzly than just like roll and resolve, you know, because there, you can only place one die in each column.
In each column, yes.
Of this board. Yeah. So you're really trying to figure out, you know, where to put these dice. Like you can't just put dice on any spot that you want. You can only put one per column. And then the value of the die is how far the ship moves down. So, you know, you might really want to take 6 energy with a 6, but that ship's moving down 6. Yeah. So suddenly, you might not want to do that. So I really liked that. Like it felt, of course there's always luck with dice, but I felt like there was enough puzzle there to keep it interesting and not just feel like whether you played good or bad didn't matter. You know what I mean?
Yep. And I really like with the puzzle part also, like maneuvering the, because, you know, like Michelle said, you put the dice and that's how far the ships move down, but you're also trying to land, in order to shoot the ships, you're trying to land them on specific locations on the board on the board as you're moving them down. So that's another big piece to the puzzles, right? Like if you need, you might have to have a four to get this certain ship to blow up this ship, in that on the right space. So you kind of have to, yeah, it's like you might really want to do something, but you can't because A, the ship's going to get down too far, or B, you're not going to be able to get that ship in the right place to blast it, type thing. So yeah, you really have to kind of, there are a few of these different things, not like I mentioned D6, which is just because it's a space solo game and it came from a nine card design thing, thingamabob. I kind of compare them, but I feel like that one is just more like a straight dice chucker versus, like Michelle said, yeah, this one has a lot more, at least compared to something like that, a lot more puzzle in it because you have to maneuver these things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and like you, when you place a white die, you reroll all your dice, yeah. So there's a chance to.
Yep.
Again, you can still get screwed, but yeah, still some puzzle there. Cool. All right, so that was a five for you.
As a five for me, man.
All right, so my first pew pew is not nearly as visually interesting as Under Falling Skies, and this is Fayum. I'm not quite sure how to say it. This is a 2020 release. Currently has a rating of 7.8 on BGG with 518 ratings, plays 1 to 5 in 110 to 140 minutes, and has a weight of 3.15. It's designed by the famous Friedemann Fries, and art is by Harold Liesk, and published by 2F Spiel. This is, I'm going to see what BGG calls it, an ancient economic farming game. Ooh, that sounds like something I would like. This is getting compared a lot to Concordia. So I guess it's kind of, yeah, deck builder game. I was going to say engine builder, but I guess that's not really it. I guess it's mostly a deck building game. So out on the board itself is a map. A very simple looking map with hexes, stone, grape, and wheat hexes, as well as some building sites. And this is a shared map, that meaning that whatever is built on it is not owned by anyone. And the game is driven by cards. So on your turn, you can play a card, buy a card, or do what's called an administration action, which if you've played Concordia is like, I think it's the forum action, or maybe not. It's the action where you can take back some cards, but I will talk about that because it is unique in this game. So okay. there is a market of cards that you buy your cards from. And the neat thing about this game, and apparently it's in Power Grid, I still haven't played Power Grid, but apparently it's there, is the cards come out and they are all numbered. And so the market goes from lowest to highest, and there's 8 slots, but you can only buy from 4 of them. Okay. So it's pretty interesting because basically what ends up happening is the cards are shifting, because every time a card gets purchased, a new one comes out, and then it all gets shifted numerically. So that's kind of neat. And it also impacts the way the game plays out, because there are games where you might get a lot of higher cards at the beginning, because they're all just, it's just a shuffled deck. So and the higher cards are more powerful. So you might end up getting some higher powered cards at the beginning. Yeah. So it really changes the, to use Z Garcia's words, the cadence of the game, which I find quite interesting. And what these cards are doing, I mean, a bunch of things, but basically they're allowing you to collect resources off of the board. And they're allowing you to build, using your resources, build structures on this board. And then certain cards will, play off of structures. So for example, you might buy a card that says, hey, if you put a dude on a settlement, and that's assuming there's settlements out there, there's always one settlement at the beginning, but you know, there's other structures that might not come out unless somebody's purchased the card to let them build that, you know, then you'll get 3 grapes, for example. So stuff like that. So really, like, the whole game is based around these cards. What you can do in a game is based around these cards. Like, I recall my first game, I didn't buy a town card. And so there were no, which is just basically adding a little stick of wood on top of a round disc. But you buy, you know, you pay to make this a town, the settlement a town using resources. And then later cards were like, yeah, if you, you can do all these things with towns. And I was like, I don't have a town. So the game is, the way the game plays out, is just completely dependent on what cards are purchased and when, and how they're played, which is neat. And I like the fact that nothing is owned. So when you build a structure using a card, it's not you build that structure in your color. It's just you put that structure out and anyone can use it. And so that's interesting as well, I think, anyways. So, and then the other thing that's neat is that administration turn. So when you do that, you actually take the top three cards of your discard. So those are the cards that you get back for free, and then you can continue to purchase cards underneath them. So there's, you're constantly trying to figure out, you know, how many cards deep do you want to go when you're playing, right? And which cards do you want to purchase back, and which cards do you want to leave? So that's really where, like, the deck, in addition to obviously buying new cards and deciding what you want to buy, there's that whole question. Or that addition to the deck construction aspect of this game. And that's really it. It's actually a really, really straightforward game. Like, the rule book is like 3 pages long. However, the card appendix is like triple that, right? Yeah. Or more. So again, it really all just comes down to the cards. But yeah, pretty simple game in terms of just like how to play it. Okay. So I talked a little bit about the board. It actually looks super ugly in pictures. I was initially really turned off by the look of this game. Mm-hmm. It's very bland looking. A lot of beige, which doesn't bother me necessarily, but there are a lot of really beautiful games coming out. So, you know, if you don't stand out in that crowd, or at least join that crowd, then, you know, it's unfortunate, in my opinion, to some extent, but it actually looks pretty good physically, in person. I think actually that it's very clear. The board fills up with a lot of bits. It never feels cluttered. It's very clear and easy to see what's going on. So I don't mind that too much. The rule book is super clear. The bits are really nice. There's a lot of like chunky wooden bits, so I really like that. Like, for the building, there's lots of different building types. There's settlements, which are circular. There's, I don't even know the name of them, but they're like an L shape. There's roads, there's bridges, there's little alligators. Like, there's lots of little different shapes. And then you've got your resources and stuff, and they're all very nice. And the buildings, like I said, are kind of chunky, so I like that. What else? The iconography. Okay, so here's a big complaint about this game, right? Is, like I was saying, the rule book is three pages long, and then you've got this like massive appendix for all the different cards, and all the cards are language independent, meaning there's no text. It's all iconography. So I know a lot of people have complained that you're constantly looking up cards in the appendix. And you are, certainly for your first game or two. It does start to become pretty clear after the first play, I would say. You know, the second play, you haven't seen all your cards, so you might look up some things, some clarifying items, but you're not like, you know, you don't look at the card row and go like, I don't know what any of those are. It starts to become pretty obvious, but it's still an issue, and it's already a pretty long game, so that's a detractor and what initially kept me from actually wanting to play this game at all. Like, I was like, I hate that. I hate having to pull myself out of a game to look up rules or read stuff. But then some of the people who I trust their opinions on recommended the game, so I gave it a go, and I didn't find it too bad, because It's not something that you're going to have to do every time you play the game. It's just to kind of get familiar with the iconography. in the first place. The other complaint is that the game is long. It's 110 to 140 minutes. That's what BGG says. It is, yeah, it is longer. I mean, I find it a really interesting game, and it doesn't bother me, but it is a longer game, and it does feel slightly repetitive. Like, the game evolves because the cards that are coming out are evolving, and obviously towards the end of the game you're going to have seen more powerful cards, and so you're going to be doing more powerful actions and that sort of thing. But it is repetitive in the sense that you're really just kind of doing the same thing again and again, like play a card, you know, like there's just not a lot there. So I could see that being an issue. Like, it to me, it kind of borders on that line of being a little bit too long. I think maybe, I was going to say at higher player counts, maybe it's better because there's more interaction and there's more consideration in terms of, ooh, should I do my administration action now? Or should I, like, because I really want to buy that card, but, you know, so there might be some more interesting decisions. But of course, as soon as you add players, and certainly in this game, if you add more players, you're adding more time. So I don't know. It'd be a balance there. What else? The solo mode. I've played the solo mode. It is very easy to implement, so I give it props for that. It's like there's not really many changes. However, it's so boring. Like, it's just, I mean, you have full access to all the cards. You're really just trying to beat a high score. Your score is super high because you can do whatever you want whenever you want. And the game, like I said, is long. You have to get through the deck is the end game trigger. Yeah. So you have to get through that deck, and you're doing a lot of the same things. So I don't think it's a very interesting solo game. It's easy to play. It would be a good way to kind of get to know the game and see what the cards are, different kinds of cards are. But yeah, oof, pretty boring. The other thing I thought of was I could see this game being a little bit, have that issue of, if I've played this game a few times and you haven't, I'm going to womp you because I know what cards are coming out and I know how that works and I know what card I should grab when it comes on the market because it synergizes with my card. I think there would be a little bit of this or a little bit of that happening, which is unfortunate. Having said all of that, I always feel like I'm like, oh, this isn't great. This isn't great. I love this game. I really do.
Do a shot each time you say that.
Yeah, I know.
But I
really, really like this game. Yeah, I find it very fun to play. I think the cards are interesting. I think the way the cards come out and the market fluctuating is interesting. I love that we're all sharing the same pieces on the board. And, you know, you're trying to play off what other people are doing and, you know, timing and all of that. It's not super interactive, but it's interactive enough for my tastes. It's easy. Like, your turn is pretty breezy. It's like play a card, buy a card, or do your administration action. So there is a nice flow to it. So I really, really like this game. I think it's a ton of fun, but I do, after a few plays, see some of those detractors, which I talked about. So in that way, I will give it a 4. 'Tis a gooder. Very much enjoying it, having a lot of fun with it. But yeah, I think if it played better solo, I would be more excited too. But yeah, great game. Like, it's a ton of fun. The other thing I will say, I know a lot of people are like me about, is just the luck, because again, you're depending on cards, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Cool.
So there you go. That's Fayum Fayum by Friedemann Fries. Highly recommend. A 4.
Cool. I would like to try that at one point. Much like any Friedemann Fries game, I think it's worth at least one play too, because there's always some. Although this one doesn't sound like his usual, where he's just trying to do something completely off the wall and and wacky. This sounds more, you know, in line with a classic Euro, at least.
Yeah, for sure.
You describe. So maybe he's trying to get back to selling stuff as opposed to just doing, you know, something crazy. But I do think any game by Friedemann Fries, you owe it. Everyone owes it to themselves to at least try, because he is so awesome. Plus, he's green hair. So,
you know, there you go.
All sorts of green stuff. Cool. So, I'm going to talk about Magical Kitty Save the Day. Yes, that is my next pew pew. Now, this is a RPG, so I don't have a BGG. I'm sure I could look at RPG Geek. But this is a RPG from board game-ish publisher, Atlas Games. So they make, board games as well. Obviously, this had cats, so A, I wanted it, and B, I initially thought this game was very much direct. And the reason I'm not saving this game for one of our Little League, one of our segments where we talk about kids' games, is I initially got this game because I thought it would be great for my daughter because she loves cats and I love cats, and it would be perfect, and Magical Kitty saved the day. But I think this is, I really do think, despite whatever they say, I think this is definitely, it's marketed and targeted towards smaller kids, but I don't know necessarily having read the rule book and read everything for it. I think this is more, an adult tween and higher game. Okay. But I do play, and I will talk about that in a second. But so this game was on Kickstarter, had a fancy schmancy Kickstarter release where you could get like these fancy sparkling cat dice. You could get wooden chips and also and some other stuff in it as well. I was not even aware of it being on Kickstarter. I was aware of the game. I did hear about it. And then I was kind of like waiting, super excited for Board Game Bliss to get it. So I got the game, and of course I got the sparkly dice because I couldn't resist that. Because they're giant chunky D6s with a cat paw on them, and they're awesome. They're great. They're much better than the little blue dice that come with the game. So this is an RPG where you are a magical kitty. You are a cat with superpowers, and you have a human. And the humans have lots of problems, Michelle, as we do have.
Yeah.
Humans have lots of problems. Yes. You basically are using your magical powers or your powers to try and basically solve their problems and prevent them from doing stupid stuff. Again, as humans, this would be great if our animals could do this for us, because we do stupid stuff all the time. But that is what you are trying to do. You are the cat. And the number one rule of Magical Kitten Save the Day, Michelle, Magical Kitty Save the Day, Michelle, is do not let your humans know you have magic powers.
Okay.
Number one, number eight. Yes. So again, much like a lot, we've talked about No Thank You Evil, and we talked about the Questlings on here. But like a lot of these family weight role playing games is, it's very much like you have a problem. Your character has a problem, needs to come up with a solution, and needs to go do it. It's very almost like that three-step thing that you have to do in this game. It's a very, at least for the most part, the rule system is very, it's D6. That's all you're rolling. You're doing checks, so your character will have three different types of checks: cunning, cuteness, and something else, one more thing. So there are three different checks that your cat will have. And that's for the most part what you're going to do. And then you can go with however you want, whatever you want to do, and which I'll get to in a second. I play this with my daughter and my wife, who's also played this. So we've played this. My daughter's obsessed with this game. We've played it, I can't even count how many times. She absolutely adores it. And that affects my rating of this game, because at least
of course,
reading like the rule book, it's kind of a hot mess. It's just like you read through it and I'm like, what? It doesn't have a cohesive, anything with it, which is kind of annoyed me a little bit, because it's clearly marketed towards families. So there could have been more kind of, and the rule book, the rule set for any kind of RPG really is the heartblood of it, because that's how you know how to kind of play the game. We do not follow kind of a lot of the stuff in there. We just basically, we have our kitties, we're trying to protect our humans, and we're doing some sort of check that I'm just making up. And we might use some of the, it gives you kind of like the things you fight and the problems, and we use that as a very loose guide for it. But I really do not like the rule book. The mission book, again, the mission book too, it's not clear. Again, thinking in terms of like if I'm completely new to these type of games, to me, like if I was to run this and have no experience and be reading this, I would be like, what is going on? What am I supposed to do here? So again, I feel like the kind of mission book and the rule book, they don't really, it's not great. And if not for that, I would probably say this was I would probably like give it a two. So I'd probably say it was like a meh. But I'm going to upgrade it to it's a fine, just because my daughter does love it so much. She's taken these minis from other games and painted them. I have just these cat minis, and she's painted them, and she loves it. We have the giant, like, city of River City, the map of River City that they give you with the game. She always wants to have it out with her cats moving around on it.
That's so cute.
The cutest thing was she wanted my wife to play with us one day, so she explained the rules. And the one thing that this game has going for it, which I absolutely adore and love, to kind of get you going and teach you the basics of the game, it's got like a choose your own adventure comic book in it, which is really neat. So that teaches you how to make the stats for your characters. It teaches you other basic stuff, and it's like a choose your own adventure book. And she had to play that like 5 times before we can move on to the actual game. It was really cute, but she like walked my wife through like character creation and taught her what a check was and explained to her that you have to roll the dice at least this many to be able to say what you want to do. And it was the cutest thing, her explaining to my wife what a check is and something. So I'm giving it a 3 for that. And I was tempted to actually put it up to Tis a Gooder just for that, but I'm going to leave it as a 3. I do think that the kind of the rule book and the written stuff is not great, and it can be really like, yeah. But it's got pictures of cats all over. It's got everything else with cats. So she loves it, which therefore I love it. So we'll say, cute. I mean, it's fine. It'll get bonus points for that.
Oh, yeah. I approve.
I approve just on that.
All right. Well, my second pew-pew is Cloud Age. This is also a 2020 release. It has 608 ratings with an average of 7.7. It plays 1 to 4 players in 60 to 100 minutes and has a weight of 2.83. This was designed by Alexander Pfister and Arno Steinwender. Art is by Christian Opperer, and this was published by Nanix Games and Capstone Games. And this is another campaign style game with Alexander Pfister. He seems to love his campaigns. More specifically, let's see what the mechanisms they say. Deck, bag, and pool building, grid movement, hand management. Now, that's not very descriptive. All right. So this game actually reminds me of a really, not dumbed down, but streamlined? No, dumbed down version of Maracaibo. So you are, and maybe you haven't played that. I don't know.
I have.
Okay, so there's a hex map with looks like post-apocalyptic style art and story, and you have a blimp airship that you are moving around this map, and you are basically playing cards and collecting resources at a super high level. Yeah, so you're moving around this map. You have movement points based on, you start with, I think, 2 is the standard. You can pay to have more movement. You might have cards that give you more movement. You might have upgraded your ship, which gives you more movement. And you're moving around on this board. It's kind of neat that you can just move anywhere. So it's like a very horizontal map. It's like 4 tiles side by side, so it looks very much like you should go from one end to the other, but you can move around however you like. You just have to end on a city, and on these cities they give you resources or points if you beat them in combat. And you, again, combat works much the same as movement. If you've upgraded your ship, if you've played cards, then you have some combat points so that you can get stuff. And so once everybody's moved around on the map and done their little thing, then there's a worker placement phase. And this is where you can choose to build cards. You can choose to place tiles out on the board to get resources and whatnot. And you can also get these cards to improve your deck. Oh, I didn't really talk about your deck. So yeah, at the beginning of every turn, you pick up two cards from this very, you start with a very small deck, and the cards have numbers on them, and you have to put the lowest card down and take either cards or energy. Basically, you choose between two types of resources in the game, and then your higher one is your movement points for the round, plus all your modifiers. So anyways, in this worker placement phase, you can get more cards added to your deck. But okay, the very innovative aspect of these cards is that you take like, I think, six or seven at the beginning of the game, and you put them into a card sleeve. And this card sleeve has a cloud sticker on it. And all of the cloud stickers are different. So there's a bunch of sleeves with a bunch of different clouds. And what these clouds do is they cover up aspects of the card. So on the card, there's a landscape with different, terrain types. I know it's not quite that, but it's the easiest way to explain it. Basically, there's the four different resources. There's energy, water, getting cards, and getting iron. And there's a type of land that represents each one of those. And the more there are of a type, the more you'll get when you get the card. So if you're looking at this card and the cloud's covering up most of it, but you notice that that looks like there's a lot of water, chances are if you go to grab that card, you choose, do you want to take water from the card? Do you want to get card, energy, blah? You choose the resource you want to grab from that card, basically. So you're trying to figure out from the cards that are out what is going to give you the resources that you want, but you can't completely see everything. And there's also bonus builds and bonus card trashing on the cards. And again, you can't really see, but you might see like a little bit of an icon that trails to the water. So you might go, okay, if I choose water and it happens to give me an extra build, that's what I want. So there's just this guessing. You're trying to pick the best card for what you need, but you're never quite certain. It's a neat gimmick. Mm-hmm. The other aspect of the worker placement that's kind of neat is that it has the following. So on your turn, so when you pick a card, for example, when you pick a card, you might say, I'm going to take this card into my deck, but I'm also going to choose to gather water from it. And then everybody else actually gets a chance to take their worker and put it down on a resource and say, okay, great, good for you, I'm going to take energy. So everybody gets a little bit from you getting that card. If you choose to build, you can build twice and everyone else can build once. So there's a lot of that in the game. Like basically when you choose an action, other people get to do something similar, but in a lesser way.
Okay.
So that's pretty much the game. You're really just trying to build up an engine. There's lots of ways you can modify your ships. You can add combat to it. You can increase your movement. You can increase how many tiles you can put down. So you're picking and choosing how you want to do that. Of course, you've got a hand of cards that you play down that do a variety of things. Like every time you get more than 5 movement points, you get points. Or every time you play this type of card, you can upgrade your ship for 1 less iron. Or just straight up, here's +2 combat points. And those cards also are worth points at the end of the game. Okay. So yeah, so you're building up all those. You know, you're trying to get a good enough deck that, you know, you're getting stuff and you're getting movement, because the further you go down the map, it is better. Like if you go from left to right, the right spots have significant points for higher combat. So, you know, you do want to be able to move. You don't want to be stuck at the very beginning the whole game. So you're just trying to do the best. And, you know, there's a variety of little ways you can do that, basically. And that's the game. And yeah, that's pretty, yeah. It's very, very simple, very straightforward. Mm-hmm. There's not that many rounds. I think there's eight rounds that you do this in. It's very like streamlined. It feels very, flows really, really well. There's a campaign, which I mentioned. So similar to Maracaibo, there's a deck of cards with a little bit of narrative. And then these cards are triggered at various points in the game. And once they're triggered, you know, you can pay stuff to get more stuff. And you're also given a story choice. And so you can choose to, like, you know, go fight the whatevers or, you know, go save Crystal. I'm making stuff up. I don't remember if there's a crystal. Probably not. So there's that aspect to it. It's similar to Maracaibo. Like, there's a story there. But I mean, if you're like, you do not play this game and you do not buy this game because you want to play a campaign with a lot of story.
What?
It's just there. It's just there to, like, add a little bit of flavor. In terms of the gameplay, it's good. It's just not very special. Like, when I was trying to think about, like, why don't I like this game more? Like, when I kind of think about the different elements of it, you know, there seems to be a lot to like. And I certainly, like, I've played it a lot being 7 plays, but I mean, I played through the whole campaign because I think it was just it's easy to get to the table. It's breezy to play. It's, you know, it doesn't overstay its welcome. It's nice. It's nice. And that's pretty much it.
You sound like a Jewish mother. It's nice. It's nice.
I mean, you know, it's nice. Yeah. The cloud cards are cool. It's a really neat little mechanism. But I mean, to me, it, like, didn't impact the game a whole lot. It was just, it was neat. You know what I mean? The rule book. It reminded me of the Maracaibo.
I was gonna say, it's like,
yeah,
the usual Fister rule book.
Yeah, it wasn't great. The bits are great. Nice big, the little blimp ships that you use are really nice. But yeah, so a decent package. I was trying to think about who this would be good for. Like, I could see it being a pretty interesting post gateway game, like, for somebody who really is interested in the hobby but has only played very basic stuff. I feel like this might be a good next level. I think, and yeah, it's fine to play through. I'm keeping it in my collection for now because it's, like, it's just so easy to play. I don't know, but then at the same time, it's not overly exciting, so it's weird that way. So I'm giving it a 3. I mean,
it's fine.
Which is exactly what it is. Fine. Uh-huh. Yep.
Just like Magical Kitty Save the World. Save the day.
Well, I don't know. I don't have any cute kittens or a cool map, so.
That's true.
Yeah.
That's true.
Speaking of.
Sure.
Bah! Ah! Bah! Bah! There it is.
There you go.
Took me a bit to find it.
Yep.
That's our BGG thread spotlight sound.
Yep.
Because this is where we use other people's comments on thread to make content for our show.
Yeah, boy.
Boom.
We should just start reviewing just like, well, we'll give them credit like we do here, but just like start reading other people's reviews of games.
Let's do it.
In our thing.
Let's do it. Like, just read comments. We'll just read the comments on the post.
Yeah.
Or on the game, I mean, on the game page.
All right, so this thread is what makes tabletop games special.
That's right, and Kiwi Roo, the OP, original poster, almost like official poster.
The official poster.
I am official. He says, or he or she says, physicality, there is something nice about having real pieces you can touch and hold. The community sitting around a table with a bunch of friends who are really there. And open-endedness, really true endless opportunity for creativity, especially in a game like Dungeons & Dragons, where there are no hard limits or bounds to what can happen. There can always be something over the hill or beyond the horizon, and it's only limited by your imagination. And Crystal. No.
Not for most of the games that Michelle plays.
Yeah. I know, I was like thinking about the Cloud Age. Campaign while I was reading, I was like, well, yeah, he pretty much captured it all.
Yeah.
Russ, or he or she, or yeah.
They, yeah, Russ says, the rules and play of board games are all done manually, and so necessarily the rules are simple enough for our puny brains to grok. In contrast, a full-featured computer game takes advantage of software automation in ways that make the game fundamentally unplayable by manual means.
Yeah, that's true. That's what makes it special to him. I found that kind of interesting just to see what different people would say. Yeah, they are simple, although I would argue a Lacerda game.
They're not all simple,
Although compared to the workings of a computer game, I see where he's coming from there. All right, Glenn Ford says, the freedom that the simplest physical game gives you, not just in the actual play, but in the ability to tinker. I love digital games, but it can be tough to house rule them. Well, that was interesting.
I guess if you're, as long as you're not on something like Tabletop Simulator, then you can do whatever you want. Doesn't matter.
Yeah, flip the table, whatever.
Like, that's my favorite thing about that, and I just like want to always flip the table when I'm playing it and losing so badly, which I always am. Anyway, Maximilian Rush.
Oh, I was just going to say, I hadn't really thought of that before. Like, I don't think of that when I'm playing games. Like, oh, I can physically make this do whatever I want versus in a video game, I'm forced to.
Yeah.
You know, but interesting.
Maximilian Rogers says, from the perspective of the designer, it can easily make tests and change very core mechanics in the board game to find the best and most innovative ones. Yeah. I mean, you can, you know, mess around with things to find out what works best. Yeah.
I guess people like to mess with games. This is what I'm learning.
Yeah.
I'm like totally a I won't house rule. How high, ma'am, when I read the rules. But apparently I am alone.
No, I'm with that too. I rarely will house rule anything. I'm like, I paid for this, including the rule book. So I'm going to do what I'm supposed to.
For me, I am not good enough at games, and I could not design a board game for the life of me. So, and I'm not saying people that house rule don't respect the designer, but for me, from my perspective, I'm like, I respect the designer and the playtesters enough to trust that they know better than I do.
Yes. And I mean, there more and more games are getting like official variants or official kind of house rules, and that's the one time I'm usually okay with it. If a designer or like publisher or whatever, if they sign off on it and they're like, yes, by all means, go ahead, you should do this.
Yeah, you know, if the official stamp is on it. All right, Andrew Williams says, for me, I feel it enables great connectivity, which is to be cherished and even celebrated in today's digital age.
Corsair says, my number one is that a board game occupies space and time. In that, to make a game happen, I have to be somewhere at some time, ready to learn or knowing to play and commit to finishing a game. And my choice, unless that game is Twilight Struggle. My choices are limited to what games are available and the taste of everyone participating. Electronic games are far more transient.
This is another one that I was like, that's such an interesting take, like just a different way to think about things for sure. Yeah,
but I also feel like, you know, I've played so many times, and I've done it myself because I'm really bad at saying no, but I played so many games with people where they clearly did not want to play a game that they're like, they would not want to play this game, and they still played it just to make someone happy in the group. So I think that last one about it's the taste of everyone participating, not necessarily.
That's like my game night with my husband every single week. He's like, oh, we're doing this again. I'm like, you said you would. Here are some dice. That helps, right? It's just like no Euros at the table. That's like the one rule. All right. Steven Davis says, the tactile and counting elements of a physical game can be subtle and important. Counting the cards in your hand or in a deck or of a certain type and calculating probabilities or counting resource cubes or victory point tokens may sound boring, but is a connection players have to the game through manipulating the components. This is so me, 100%. Yeah, like I love bits, right? Like, yeah, manipulating them, touching them, putting them in the right places. I'm like that with books too. Like I do read digital books, but I will never read only digital. Like I love the feeling of the paper and the cover and the way the the book bends. Like, yeah. Anyways, there you go. Are you like that at all or no?
I'm like that with not, well, with, yes. I mean, I do. I mean, some people said this, but my kind of why tabletop games are so great is something I can't really experience now is kind of the connection, right? The connection to other people through this cardboard medium type thing. I'm definitely, and I do like that I am a very tactile person, obviously, as people could probably hear now as we're recording this, and I'm dropping tons of stuff on the floor because I'm fidgeting with a cat with a toy cow and dice and a paintbrush. I need to be fidgeting. I need to be touching stuff all the time or else I can't concentrate. So I do like doing that. And I'm the same thing. Like I really struggle with reading, like digital books, like maintaining my attention for it. I need to be, in order for me to get through a book properly, chances are I need to be reading the actual, like an actual paper version. So I'm like that in that respect.
So do you find like when you're playing on the computer and playing board games, like on Tabletopia or whatever, do you find that you still like you can focus or do you just need to...
I struggle really bad. Yeah, I don't do that. And I mean, the reason I play anything I play online is again for the social connection.
Like, mm-hmm.
You know, that's the reason I do it, to be able to have that. And I struggle so bad to focus when I'm playing online. Hmm. I struggle hard enough when I'm playing in person, but online, yeah. I'm just, yeah, it's way worse.
Yeah, and for me, like I actually, that's what I have to do with TV, right? Is to keep my focus with board games. I don't find it keeps my focus, but I find it improves the experience so much more. Like it's just so much more enjoyable.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Jesse, I'm guessing this is French, but I don't know. Jesse Reeve Chambrin says, real time interaction and the right type of social friction from games. It's a great chance to bring out a person's character in comfortable settings.
Mm-hmm.
Which is true. I could see that. I know quite a few people who are so different when they're playing a game versus like in real life. It's so interesting to see. It's such an interesting dynamic. And I feel like that's something you don't get on like the online, format.
Really? Because isn't Second Life that in spades?
No. I mean, like with just like from what I know, and there are some people that I play with and. I don't know. I feel like there's just maybe it's just because, I mean, a lot of the people, some of the people who I game with digitally now, they are also video gamers. So it's, I don't know. I just find a difference between like when you're playing a game physically with someone versus, the online. And I think part of that is the distraction level, right? Like I think playing a board game online is way different than playing like any, I don't know, Halo or Gears of War or any game I can't think of.
For
it's
sure.
It's just like a much more late, and it's much easier to kind of get distracted and not just for me. I mean, I've spoken to other people too. Like they might be doing this. They might be playing the game and they might be working and they might be doing something else and four other things where when you're doing that kind of social, yes, people have their phones, but for the most part, they're not like completely, they're not engaged in other stuff. They're mostly focusing on the game. Whereas I feel like, on the online portion, you can be doing, at least specifically for board gaming. I'm not talking about other things. I know people get so immersed in things like Half-Life or World of Warcraft, right, and things like that, where they get super immersed. But I find in the board game aspect of it, I feel like people don't necessarily get, as I'm sure there are, but they don't get as immersed in it as other things. If that makes sense.
Yeah, it does. I agree. Like, they don't. Yeah, I used to play Call of Duty and I would get COD rage because it's like, COD rage because I would get so frustrated. And I wouldn't get Lahav rage or something, you know, like it just, but I think where I was going with it too was that ability to perhaps be something or do something that is outside of your normal character that you can do in a board game, right? Like maybe, maybe you suddenly like dudes on a map and you like attacking people and that's totally outside of your character, but it's like this weird place where you can just have fun in that space.
Yeah. Totally.
Yeah. And I think video games are even more that like,
well,
that's why I brought Second Life because it's, yeah.
That makes sense.
Anything you thought of that wasn't covered here? What makes them so special?
I don't feel like these people covered everything. I can't think of anything else.
I think for me, I think the only thing here that I feel wasn't really covered is just the way it makes you think. You know, we've talked about this before. Like you play games more for the people, and I play games more for the way I like, the way it makes me think. And I didn't see that in here, but I really love that. I'd love just sitting down and it's like doing a mental puzzle. And I really enjoy that. Not that I don't like the people aspect, but obviously, like, I play games solo a lot, and two-handed alone a lot, because I like just experiencing the puzzle in the game. So, yeah. We did another episode.
We did. Hey, yeah. And before we sign off.
Yeah.
The most important question for you, Michelle.
Okay.
This week, which we left that white elephant in the room. Have you seen the Snyder Cut yet?
The what, huh?
Yeah, the Snyder Cut of Justice League.
The what, huh?
You haven't seen the four-hour superhero movie from 4 years ago that was really bad, but now there's another version that no one asked for. You haven't seen that. That's actually really good.
Is it, though?
It was very good. Yes,
Listen.
I quite enjoyed it. I mean, it wasn't great,
as someone who's well versed in pop culture, Sean, I haven't even heard about this. So if it's that good, I would have heard about it.
I thought your daughter was like all into superheroes and super.
Yeah, that was like just Huey.
That's not anymore.
She's into ninjas now. It's a thing.
Not like I would recommend her watching this because there's swearing in it and very dark. And
oh, that's fine. She's four. She's ready for that.
She could swear all she wants.
Bring it on. Well, that sounds terrible. I would definitely get a lot of Under Falling Skies played, though, if I watched that movie.
You probably would for 4 hours. Yes.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. I would probably finish the campaign. So.
Yeah. Yeah. Totally. 100%.
All right. Well, before we close out the show, we do want to say thanks again to all of you, our amazing listeners, and our show sponsor, Board Game Bliss. A store where you can find an amazing selection of games from around the world, bringing joy to you and your loved ones. And don't forget to use the coupon code ATB-TAKE5OFF100 to take $5 off your order over $100. One use per customer, no other rules apply. The next time you are playing with someone who has AP, may we suggest you use that time to click the subscribe button and leave us a review on Apple Podcasts. Thanks again. Bye.
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 So my wife absolutely loathes when we do the bye thing. She thinks it's the stupidest thing in the world, and she hates it. And we were recently listening to it. I feel like they do something similar on a bunch of different things I listen to. But we were listening to something, a podcast that she really likes. I can't remember which one, but they started doing like the bye thing. And I was like, ha, see, like, that's like a legit podcast where they're being paid for it and people are like paying money and stuff, and look, they're doing it.
We're just ahead of the trend, man.
And she was like, yeah, she was like, you should fast forward through that part.
Yeah, I could see how our podcast would be kind of grating, but at the same time,
all the things, you know, like the 2 second thing that we do by, that's the thing that gets her.
I know,
like,
right?
Like an hour and a half of content before that would drive me up a wall, and I have to listen to it for like 6 or 8 hours every time I edit it and stuff. And then I like to speak to it while I'm driving in the car or something.
It's like the cute part. Yeah. Yeah, there's a lot worse in every episode for sure.
Bye. All right. Now I'll